Welcome back to the Perth Business Podcast. In this episode, Hannah and I talk to Luke Whelan, who you might better know as the director of Perth is Okay and Social Media. Hannah and I chat to Luke about some of the most interesting stories from his journey navigating business in Perth, including starting a nightclub promotion, creating an iPad magazine, breaking some epic Perth artists who are now global superstars, and cultivating a local content brand that aims to be the largest in the Southern Hemisphere. Give it a listen and let us know what you think.
I absolutely hate my voice, so...
What? No, you have a good voice. You've got a presenty voice.
You have to say that, don't you?
Yeah. Yeah, we do. It's in the contract.
Yeah. We'll fix that in post.
All right. Your time is valuable, so... Thanks for making the time to chat with us today, Luke. Super excited.
No worries.
I think you actually asked us once, you were like, what's the one business you want to interview? And Hannah and I looked at each other because she was like, it's Perth is Okay. And I was like, yeah. Oh, dunno, Luke. Couldn't even, not off the top of my head, couldn't tell you.
Oh, well, aim low then, aim low.
Standards.
Dropping. I can tell this is going to be a fun one. Cheers for taking the time. We really appreciate it. And I know you want to go in depth about your origin story. We don't want to hear about the conception, unfortunately. Not this time around.
Yeah, no, we'll save but that for later.
Mark and Margaret. Dark sneaky room.
Pardon? Well, were you conceived in a cave?
The year was 14 BC. It's that youthful look that you've just maintained throughout the years. It's actually a superhero. So give us the origin story. I want to hear how Luke came to be, and if there was a turning point for you at the beginning of your... Well, okay, let's start small. Where'd you go to school? Were you born in Perth?
No, I was born in Ireland, in Kildare, which is like an hour outside of Dublin. Mm-hmm. And I grew up there till I was about 10. And I went to a primary school that had 32 entire people in it.
Wowee.
Yeah, really big. 4 people in my class. And then we immigrated to Australia in 1999.
Okay, cool.
So, yes, boat person I am.
Yeah. I mean, I was going to say, did you ride a cloud over? Because I know Ireland's weather is just phenomenal. Yeah,
phenomenal
very
weather.
Renowned.
Really happy. Yeah. It just makes sure that everyone has to go to the pub.
Exactly. It's warm in the pub. Yeah. They've got a fire going.
But yeah, immigrated to Frio and basically lived in Frio ever since, which is cool.
Oh, you're a Frio guy. All right. Yeah.
You can't tell?
Yeah. No, you don't have the face tattoos.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Or the dreadlocks.
I'm just kidding for anyone who's from Fremantle. Buying into the stereotypes. It's fine. I actually really like, because I recently moved south of the river. I say recently, it was like 2 years ago. Yeah, I'm in Como, so I'm like just south of the river. I'm like the one train stop.
We'll take you.
Yeah, we'll take it.
If any southies, we'll have you.
And I did. I lived like north of the river for 6 years, I think, when we moved to Perth. And I was like, oh, I'll never get south of the river. They're different. They're very different.
They
and
are
I
different. Yeah.
Moved down. I'm like, my life is actually so much better. I'm way more relaxed. I don't know what's up with the
really?
Northies.
Really?
Yeah,
I find it tense. More relaxing in the north, especially as soon as you pass and get to the Kwinana Freeway. Everyone's just nuts. I don't
Kwinana
like going
freeway,
there.
What's that?
Oh god,
latitude. Okay, so you're from Frio. You've been
I
there
am.
For a while.
Been Do there you for have a while.
Wait, you just built a house, didn't you?
Yes, across from the illustrious Beaconsfield Hotel. If
Amazing.
Anyone's down there, the worst best pub in town. But yeah, we used to have an office in Frio and lived the Frio bubble lifestyle, which probably wasn't conducive. And if you know anyone that lives in Frio, you'll know the person I'm talking about that just never leaves. But now we travel up to the Big Smoke every day just to break it up a little bit. Otherwise, I'd be in my Fremantle cave.
Yeah, where you were conceived and born.
Yeah, yeah, the smelly dark one.
Amazing. Okay, so now we know where you live.
my address is.
Please. Just cut that out. And you've been there for a while. You've built a house, so you're kind of settled there. That's amazing. You mentioned you've moved into the Big Smoke. Give us the origin story of Perth is Okay, and I want you to take us back. Let's start with Perth is Okay, how it originated, and then we're going to go into your backstory.
And do a reverse chronological. Okay.
I think so.
So, Perth is Okay. It started out as an Instagram account between me and a guy called Blake Kellaway. Mm-hmm. So we were working in the nightclub industry at the time, which we'll delve into more, I'm assuming. Mm-hmm. And we ran a club night. So a club night, if you don't know, is like when promoters come in and schedule and program one night at a nightclub and do all the marketing and stuff for it, which was kind of a thing at the time. And
time are we talking?
It would have been 7 years ago. So what's that? 2014,
yeah,
maybe?
Good maths.
It's
quick.
And yeah, <Fast maths. laughs> I guess we just wanted to see what we could do with this new thing called Instagram. Kim Kardashian had just become a term that everyone knew, and a person that was blowing up.
Kim K break the internet.
That's it. She was breaking the internet. We wanted to see what we could do with Instagram. The term influencer was being bandied about. We're not very good looking, so we thought, let's come up with something else.
Depends who you ask, potentially.
Yeah.
To someone.
Yeah, maybe someone. But, yeah, we wanted to see what we could do with the platform without making it, like, personal-driven. And we'd been working in the music industry, and everyone nationally sort of had this opinion that Perth is a bit of a backwater town.
Mm-hmm.
And we're like, oh, it's not that bad. It's okay. Mm-hmm. So the idea was conceived, and boom, the rest is history, I guess.
Yeah, cool. And you just hit recently a milestone, which was broadcast across Yagan Square's cylindrical digital screen.
Big phallic screen,
oh,
yes.
Oh, yeah.
That is being... Okay, just went right there. I love it. Now we've got a visual. Can you tell us about that?
I think we hit 4 million hashtags. Is that what we're referring to?
Yes.
Yes.
So yeah, the whole concept was that, like, this user-generated content thing, again, which was a new term. And the goal is, if you can start a movement and people sharing content, then you have an army of content or contributors showing you what's good in Perth, in our case. So I think we still get someone hashtagging Perth is okay every 30 seconds or something.
Amazing.
Wow.
Which is kind of cool. And we've sort of taken that community-driven feel and sort of applied it to all the new platforms that we've launched since Instagram. So the Facebook and the website and the EDM list and blah, blah, blah. So, yeah, that whole community-led vibe is what we're pushing.
Mm-hmm.
And now that we're sort of getting bigger and more established as a digital media outlet, it sort of gives us a really good North Star, I guess, about where to go content wise and treat your audience good and make sure they feel felt. And then when you do advertising stuff, I feel like people engage better.
Yeah, I like that. Feel felt. That's nice.
Feel felt.
Feel felt.
Yeah.
Feel felt.
Yeah.
I often feel felt.
And that's why you're on opposite sides of the table.
I was pushed away.
You did launch recently Perth is Okay Local.
We did.
Which I loved because I think your point about having a community-driven content sort of strategy is really important for what you guys do. And then Perth is Okay Local. Was that born out of COVID?
Yeah, so when COVID sort of hit, we were freaking out like everyone else. Mm. Blake was actually in Thailand and I'd been doomsday prepping him for months.
Wow.
It's coming. And then he was literally in Thailand. I was like, you have to get home right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
While I'm sitting there figuring out how long these businesses would last if we didn't get another client.
Yeah.
So when he got back, we were like, all right, what can we do that's positive? And we were making sure that we were visiting every Fremantle pub before they closed down.
Mm-hmm.
So we're helping in that sense. But then we were like, let's do something positive for the community. And we started Perth Will Be Okay, which then evolved into Perth is Okay Local. Just sort of showing what local businesses were doing to get by in those unprecedented times.
Yeah, and you guys jumped on it in a really timely manner because I saw that Perth Will Be Okay at the beginning of, like, yeah, my local, like, pizza shops were kind of putting out notices and having to let staff go and things like that. And it was kind of freaky to accept, I think, and a lot of people would have had trouble accepting it. So to see something come out of that where you're like, all right, we're going to assume the worst sort of thing and then prepare for the best, I guess.
Well, yeah, it was like before they announced the JobKeeper staff and everyone was literally losing their minds that it's the end of days, or especially if you're in small business.
I say small businesses, man. Mm. It's scary to, like, go through that.
It's scary enough.
Yeah.
So add that stuff and, yeah, I think everyone was seriously panicking.
Yep.
But thankfully, even COVID doesn't want to come to WA. So.
Yeah. Just the Feb 5 is looming. Yeah, so that's pretty cool. And I really like that idea because it's giving people a voice that who otherwise wouldn't have had one.
Mm.
I think that's great.
And it's kind of a natural progression of what we were doing.
Yeah.
Like, we never went into this to be a digital publisher. We just sort of did something that felt right.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been going well. And we're just riding the wave right now, which is kind of cool.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay. So I want to know about the skills that it takes to get to where you got to. So We
get what you got.
Yeah. We want to hear all about you. Mm. Tell us everything. When did you get your pen license?
did you get your pen license?
I don't know if I got a pen license. How I don't even had those in Ireland. Oh. Still using crayons.
You guys just, yeah, scratching the stone like biblical times.
So I actually studied engineering at UWA. Mm-hmm. I used to be good at science and maths and those kind of things.
Yep.
And then me and some buddies, we started doing events at uni. And then we were like, hey, imagine if we did these uni events, but not in uni, at nightclubs. So we started a company called Metric Events. Maybe, yeah, it would have been 11 years ago now, 11 or 12 years ago. And anyone that was going out nightclubbing around that time probably would have went to something called Cheek, which was a Wednesday mm-hmm. night nightclub. And yeah, that quickly expanded into lots and lots of weekly events and dropping out of my final year of engineering, much to the disappointment of mum and dad. Sorry. But
look,
yeah,
at you now.
Yeah, look at us now. Is that a positive? but yeah, I guess what we were just the right time at the right place. And the whole driver of that business was Facebook marketing and social media marketing, neither of which were terms. At that point, like, you couldn't study it. Like, SEO and PPC were probably around and established by then, but this whole social media thing was still really, really in its infant. Mm-hmm. Infancy?
Yeah.
Let's
use
English.
It was inside an infant.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's not, before we start.
Yeah. We'll stop on. But yeah, so we were marketing a product, which was events to the people that were on that platform, which were university students. And it proved to be highly successful. And if you've used any of these platforms, when they release new features, i.e. photo albums, they give you lots of free stuff in the form of reach. And we sort of utilized that to our benefit. So we were just at the right place at the right time to develop our own playbook for social media marketing, which was kind of cool. And even like things like Facebook Business Manager and the sort of paid platforms that came out of it, we were there sort of using our own money to turn 10x ROI on advertising campaigns.
Cool. Yeah.
So that was all really cool. Yeah. And we were living a life that was really fun in our early 20s. Mm-hmm.
Your buddies, the buddies that you started the business with, did anyone have skills in this area, or were they similar to you where they were completely doing something else and then...
Dropout engineers.
Yeah.
One was a dropout engineer. One was doing architecture, so he was a bit more creative, and then went on to do design and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I think one was doing commerce and marketing. So kind of, sort of, but not really.
Yeah. Cool.
And not in this sphere, because this sphere was new.
Yeah.
And then we kind of had to develop the business around that. So we'd just be there Googling, like, what is a CDJ and what is...
What is a CDJ?
CDJ is like an electric turntable.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
okay.
All these things that you needed to run an events company.
Right.
So you all
sort of had like the drive that you wanted to do something with it, and you sort of knew it was going to be a business?
Yeah, well, because we were under the university, we were sort of running like a business anyway. You still had to do like budgets and all that kind of stuff. So we sort of stepped into the events business with a little bit of know-how, I guess. But I guess we didn't really realize how successful it was going to be.
Yeah.
And it turned out to be quite successful. So there was a point there where we were doing like 4 or 5 weekly club nights, probably turning over 2,000-4,000 people. And then we used that to launch like an artist-based touring arm of the business, so monthly events with breaking artists, and then that went on to become 10,000 people national music festivals.
Amazing.
Which was kind of cool.
Wow, yeah.
I want to hear a story from that. So I know that you've mentioned in the past, you work with breaking artists that, you know, coincidentally, we're at the Hen House where they also have like breaking artists come here, and they've got this little wall where they have all the Polaroids of, you know, already famous upcoming artists, bands, etc.
Yeah.
Which is very cool, super cool. And I feel like you would have had your fair share, and you probably brushed over it because you're like, it's in my history, it's in my past, you know, it's all good. In my head, it's right here. But for people who might not know what kind of, you know, because it's easy enough to say we work with what do you call them?
Breaking artists.
Breaking.
You got to break them. Break them in.
Yeah.
Like a horse.
Like a horse. Yeah.
No. Exactly the same.
You get kicked a couple of times, yeah. It's fine. Giggle break. who were some artists that you really like, for you it was like a milestone, you're like, this is cool, this is chill, and then afterwards you're like, holy fuck, I can't believe we did that.
So the main one that is kind of good segue, thanks for doing that. So there was this guy that was in a band called From First to Last called Sonny Moore, and he'd just sort of pivoted his career to try this new kind of music style called dubstep. Mm-hmm. And dubstep basically was unheard of before this point. And so we used to run a Saturday club night called Father, which was at Republic Nightclub. And if anyone's ever been there, it was a male strip club until midnight. And it was the grossest but most fun nightclub in all the land.
Grossest with the mostest.
Yeah. It was gnarly. Like, there was a guy called the Cowboy who was the head stripper / club owner. And he was the loosest business owner I've ever seen. So yeah. Maybe you should get him in next.
Yeah.
Actually.
Can you connect us?
Yeah. He was on the cover of Cosmo with his shirt off.
Oh my God.
Yeah, holding a lion.
Oh. Yeah, you started with the shirt off. I was like, does it get better? Or?
We'll put that in the podcast notes.
Yeah.
So this guy was loose as hell, which is a different story. But anyway, this artist was coming to town, and we teamed up with these guys that were running a club night called Dorsia to put on this act. And it turns out that act was Skrillex. And at the time, he was a nobody. He'd released one EP, maybe, that this is My Name is Skrillex, free EP, I think.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, he just came to play this weird nightclub that had strippers on the stage maybe an hour before. And actually, there was a band playing across the road at Amplifier called Bring Me the Horizon.
Oh, yeah.
And Ollie, you may have heard of. And I think it's the only time in history that Ollie Sykes has gotten on the mic for a Skrillex show, because they have like a remix together.
Yeah.
Anyway.
That blows my mind, because that was like my high school. Like, yeah. That was my childhood.
Say, for, like, 14-year-old me is like screaming.
Yeah. The posters on the wall just...
But like, we were just kind of living this life, and I guess none of it really seemed crazy. It just felt like everything was normal.
Yeah.
And it all sort of progressed naturally. But what we did well, or I guess what we were about, is that when artists would come over, we'd like really hang out with them and let them stay at our house. And I'm pretty sure that Skrillex lived at one of the guys I was doing the events with, Alex's house, for like a week or two with his girlfriend.
Amazing.
So we'd fully hang out with these dudes and just treat them normal, because we didn't know any different and we were all kind of the same age, in our early 20s.
Yep.
And we were all just like about the events and music lifestyle. And then what would happen is these acts would go and become super, super famous.
Yeah.
And we'd be like, oh, hey, remember us? We're those guys from Perth.
Yeah, we were really grounded and super authentic.
And it actually, like, it paid dividends, right? So, like, Skrillex blew up, and then we went and toured around America with him, like, maybe 12 months later.
Wow.
And in that period, he'd gone from, like, this new... I guess he was always famous from his old band, but not to the levels that he reached as Skrillex.
Yeah.
He won a few Grammys and stuff.
Really cool.
Yeah.
So, but in the period between playing in Perth and then going and seeing him, I think it was the maybe Ultra Tour, he had just become this mega, mega superstar.
Yeah.
And we're just like, hey, where's some dudes in Perth? Do you want to drink some beers? Or do something? And like, it was all about it.
Do you want to hang out? Good,
yeah, it was probably like refreshing.
You can come to my house.
Yeah. Like, the pressure over there, like for artists and stuff, it's gnarly. Like the industry that sort of follows it around. And yes, it's a lot different in LA than it is to here, which is not surprising.
Yeah.
But yeah, so we just kind of did that lots and lots of times. So we did lots of the first shows for Flume, for Peking Duck, Alice in Wonderland, Chet Faker, any of those Australian bands that are really big. Mm-hmm. The Rufus guys, we did lots of stuff with them.
Cool. Yeah, they're touring soon, aren't they? And their tickets are spenny.
Oh, they were. I looked away. I was like, no.
I think they sold 60,000 tickets in LA the other week.
Yeah.
Which is like
amazing.
Excessively massive for any Australian band.
Yeah.
So Tame Impala, probably the only one that could do that. Still.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, basically we were living that life and we treated them like people and we got around them and looked after them and put on good shows and we sort of lived that lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess we always kind of knew that our events days would not last forever.
Mm-hmm.
It's obviously quite taxing to be going out so often.
Yep. How long was that period, roughly?
The heyday would have been like 5 years, maybe.
Cool.
So from like 20 to 25 is kind of when it was all going nuts.
Yep. So when you had peak energy levels.
Yeah. And it's kind of what you want to be doing at that age. So we got to drink for free and we thought that was really cool. I think that's probably why we started the business. We're like, hey, how can we stop spending so much money at these bars and nightclubs?
Yeah. I love it. out of that was born, like, this fucking mega mine project.
I'm pretty sure one of the first times we did something, it was like, hey, we'll pay you guys $100 in bar cards if you can bring 200 people to this nightclub.
And done.
And we're like, what is the catch?
Now you'd be like, is that it? Is that all?
Yeah. Well, we're going to bring you like $20,000 worth of revenue for a $100 bar card?
Yeah, I'll do it.
No way.
Seems legit, yeah. Checked out. It only takes you like 4 to get drunk though, right?
Yeah, that's it. These days it does.
Yeah.
But yeah, so we had this great relationship and we were we developed like a pool of creative people around us. So we'd need like designers to do the flyers, photographers to do club photography. Then we started doing the video thing and then we'd start doing like the paid advertising thing. And we're like, hey, we've sort of collected all these people around us that we're really good at this new digital creative thing on social media, because that's what we had to do to drive the business.
Mm-hmm.
So we had an opportunity from Skrillex, was like, hey, do you guys want to make a video clip for us? And we were like, oh, yeah, that would be really cool.
Did you have any equipment? Yeah?
Not really.
Phone. And yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Let me go buy the new iPhone 1.
Yeah. Well, it's like the iPhone actually was pretty shit then. So we were using like DSLRs, which are kind of the other way around. So
yeah, I remember those days. Yeah. I was doing work experience and they were like, just bring your phone. I was like, my mum and dad don't let me have a good phone, so I'm just going to get this really expensive camera that I got for Christmas, and I'm going to work out all the little knobs and buttons and tricks.
So when we started doing this, so like, because your iPhone was so bad, like everyone had like sort of newer Nokias. The iPhone, like the club photography had to be done by a photographer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So then the photos had to go up on Facebook and that was the only way you got them.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Oh, like they wouldn't send them to you.
No, because like it just wasn't how it was done. Like the photographer go out and take some decent photos and they're the only decent photos you ever got. Yeah, literally, right? So it's like the only time you'd get a good photo to like put on your Facebook is when you go to these events and get the nice photo. So I guess it was that kind of fed it as well. Like people like there's no such thing as a local influencer. They'd go to these be the scene at the photos and all that kind of shit. So that was the time, and I guess we always knew there was a time limit on it, and we were cognizant of that. So then this opportunity came to do this video for Skrillex, and we're like, cool, we should use that as a springboard to make something. Like, we're going to get a global platform here. What the fuck can we do?
Yeah.
So we're like, all right, let's start an iPad magazine.
That was the
master plan. Based on all the tools we had at our disposal. So we're like, we'll do this lifestyle magazine, music lifestyle. That's what we're into. We have access to artists. We have access to creatives. If you put that all in the blender, what comes out? And like Apple was kind of touting that the iPad magazine was going to be the future and the future of sort of content and media, which did not work out. But yeah, so we launched this iPad magazine called Pirates off the back of this video with Skrillex, which was called Summit. And it was literally just all of our friends shot by a guy called Tay Kaka doing fun lifestyle shit. And I think it's got like 13 billion plays or something.
It's awesome. We'll link it in the podcast notes because it is quite cool. And like, if we do eventually pop this on YouTube, we'll do like a little excerpt if we can get the rights to that one. But that was such a cool project because it's so authentic. It was just like following. Go on, you tell a story.
You say it so much better. I was just like, it was just a collection of sort of nighttime lifestyle moments captured and put into a bit of a storyline about being young and carefree, which was really close to home at the time. And needless to say, the iPad magazine did not work because no one wants to pay for media. especially not on an iPad magazine. So we sort of started out, we did 10 or 20 episodes and we started this new business called Pirates. And it was really arduous. The levels of complexity dealing with Apple are really hard. And like if we're trying to do it, I think we're doing it fortnightly and then making people pay for it and blah, 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 blah. So quickly it turned into a blog and a website called pirates.com. And that was much more successful. Obviously, free content, web-based platform, nice and easy to consume. And that went really well. And I guess that was the kind of publishing arm to our events business at the time. And then what else happened from then? I guess we were so successful in the events industry that we kind of thought that we were untouchable. We were the biggest geniuses in the whole world. It turns out we were not. But I guess we were still super young. We were still in the early 20s and we were probably running businesses that were netting well over $1 million revenue at this point. Not normally how you would see things going.
No.
So I guess we were bigger than our boots.
Yeah, definitely.
We kind of did lots of things in that period. So this is probably, 7 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
So there was a failed fashion label in there.
Oh, do tell. Please expand.
Yeah, that lasted probably 12 months and we were making all these clothes in Bali and that thing. And then there was I think a whole order didn't come because of the weather in Bali.
Just
ruined all of our relationships with our suppliers. So we knocked that one on the head.
Yeah.
We had a record label under the Pirates banner. So we were a subsidiary to Warner Music because obviously we were doing the events thing and the music culture thing.
Yeah.
And I think we kind of assisted in signing up June Rats to that label, which was kind of cool.
Sick.
That's
massive.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was kind of cool. And then what else did we do? And then so the Pirate sort of brand evolved into, so the blog still goes, but now it's more of a creative agency.
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe 5 years ago, I'd kind of wrapped up the events arm of what we were doing.
Mm-hmm.
We'd launched a nightclub called Jackrabbit Slims at that point. And well and truly getting old and tired. And
I can't keep drinking this much.
Yeah, the body was taking its toll. And we're getting old and have fiancés and mortgages and stuff. So
reality hits.
Right. And that's not really where you want to be anymore. But I think we'd done everything that we could do in that space. And the event industry kind of cooled with the WA market cooling,
mm-hmm.
as does happen. So that would be in 2016, 17? That was kind of the end of that chapter in my life.
Cool.
And it was time to go and do something else.
That's awesome. But I have a question around that because I feel like a lot of people might have the conception that life is, and you're not taught any different at school, that life has a certain trajectory, right? Which is probably why you started engineering and you sort of had this idea, or your parents or someone gave this idea to you that your life trajectory was based on a career and a certain path. Like you go to school, it's got to be a good school, you're going to go into university and you're going to have a job, pay mortgages, etc., etc. And you're like, yep, cool, going to do that. And then start doing it and you're like, this is shit. I want to do something else. So if you're a creative mind, with someone who needs a different sort of outlet, how you've given that a go and you did it and then you said reality sort of hit in that, realisation this is actually not sustainable. What about people who have that, that creative mind and that outlook for their own lives that's not the traditional trajectory? What's your opinion about that sort of thing and how do you think it could be sustainable for someone to, because you're still doing something really, creative, but you've now turned it into something that's sort of following a trajectory that allow you to have that, a family, a career, employees, that sort of thing. How did you navigate that? And at any point were you like, what have I done?
That's happened many times.
Yeah.
I guess, the idea to me, I remember looking at my final year of engineering and trying to pick a thesis and doing all this stuff. And it was at that point where I didn't care what I did. It wasn't supposed to be that.
Mm-hmm.
I just had no interest in following that path. I know plenty of people that did go on that path and they're highly successful and we're in WA with the mining boom, they're probably making heaps of money. But I still think at some point, if that's not what's going to fulfill you, you're going to reach a point where all the money in the world won't make you happy.
Mm-hmm.
But on the plus side, it's probably never been easier to find your own road. I think companies are becoming less and less reliant on degrees, especially in the tech space. The whole working from home thing means you can freelance from bloody anywhere.
Yeah.
I think universities are going to look different in the future just because it's so easy to self-learn and self-teach right now.
Mm-hmm.
And industries are changing so quickly that they have to really work to keep on top of that educational curve.
Yeah.
But live and die by the sword, there's going to be times where if you go off that path, you hit the rock bottom. So at the end of my events sort of character type, character arc, let's call it.
Oh, yeah.
End of that
episode 19.
Yeah,
yep.
End of that plot line. I'd built so much of my personality around being the events guy that when that kind of stopped being true, you had to kind of go back to the drawing board and figure out what it is you want to be known for and what provides value and more so what's going to pay your mortgage. And events are inherently risky. Whereas freelancing, at least there's a contract there of some description or, yeah, there's different types of businesses based on what you want them to do, and some are scalable and some of them are contract-based, which means they hold a certain value and evaluation. We could talk about all that stuff in depth, but it's kind of finding a good mixture of steady income versus fulfillment versus potentially a big scalable business that could sell for lots of money, or finding that right mixture of things for you personally. So yeah, when at the end of the events cycle for me, I was living with a guy called Ben Hardy, and he just started his own social media marketing company called Social Medial. And we happened to be living together and knew each other for years and years and years. And I was kind of on the couch being a sad sack, not doing too much and figuring out the next iteration. And he just flicked me a client and I started working on that. And then I was like, hey, this is pretty good. I could do this. And simultaneously, I was working on Perth is OK. But we'd literally, I don't think we'd ever made money out of it at this point. We had this big Instagram following and hadn't figured out what digital media is yet. But I'd obviously fooled around in multiple different industries at this point. So I knew there was a way of making it work. It's just figuring that out. And with all businesses, trying to find the perfect client or customer and proving that you're valuable to them. So that was the spark that ignited the new part of my career, which has been the last 5 years. And that's been kind of cool. So social media provides services in the form of social media marketing, which I realized I've been doing for the last 6-7 years with my own money.
Yeah.
So we're quite unique because I've had to learn it the hard way. And
yeah. You said something funny when we spoke last. Well, it's funny to me because you said you were like, oh, I started this, you know, started doing this thing where the skill set was in social media, and your thoughts were like, oh, anyone could do this. Like, is this really what I want to do? And then you realized actually not just anyone could do this. Like, it's a learned skill and you have to keep learning because Facebook and, yeah, any social media platform is constantly evolving at like an exponential rate. So you like the fact that you were like, oh, yeah, anyone could kind of do it. I was like, wow, that took me back to like the days where I studied engineering for 1 year and then came and did a year of business in Perth with my brother. And it like kind of crushed me because I worked so hard in engineering. Like I had to work so hard. Any study that I did, I had to study real hard to actually do well. And my brother would just come in and fucking blitz the exams and with like not even a moment.
I hate that guy.
Yeah. But the fact that you were like, oh, anyone could do this. Like, nah, not anyone can do it because it depends on what your like mindset is and your determination and your motivation and your specific skill set and your what's it called when you have a tendency or there's a word for it. It starts with A. Like you're adept at actually being good with people or being good with technology or being, you know, an engineer, that sort of thing. And with social media, I think it's a really like finite skill that many people don't have. Yeah. Even if some people do think they do and they might not, it's a skill. So that's interesting. And is that your passion, sort of the learned skills that you have, or is your passion more motivated by your lifestyle and what lifestyle your work can give you?
I think on your first point that most people probably inherently undervalue what they can do. And I don't know why that is.
Yeah.
We just assume that everyone can do that.
Yeah.
And then when we started talking to people and working with people, we were like, oh, shit, like, we actually do have a clue here.
Yeah.
So there's a whole heap of imposter syndrome that you have to deal with early days, maybe. But then you realize that, like, half the people are lying about what they can do. And the other ones just generally don't know. So you're like, if you've been doing it and you can do it, then you're probably in a pretty good position to do a kind of service consulting based business, I would say. What gives me value? I do enjoy learning new things and figuring it out. And that little engineer bit in my mind goes, oh, that's cool. There's a solution to that. And I get to try it out. And then if it works, it works. I guess now what I'm passionate about is, so both teams have grown exponentially over the last sort of 2 years. Mm. So Social Media Ore now has 5 employees hiring 6th, and Perth is okay 6 hiring 7.
Cool.
And I'd always worked in teams and stuff, but it wasn't like corporate structure. So we're doing the corporate thing for the first time. Office on the terrace and just wearing a shirt and slacks and all that kind of stuff.
Is that a button up?
Yeah.
Fancy. I know, right?
Where's the tie?
Which is conversely very different to what I used to wear and how I used to live. So we used to all live in this warehouse that we'd hired out and pretend it was a depot, and there was 10 dudes living in this warehouse with a half pipe kind of thing.
Yeah.
So times have changed.
Yes, yeah. But I think you also bring that humble like vibe to the agency. Like having worked in agencies, I've seen like the different operation. Everyone thinks they're fucking cool as because they have the pool table in the office.
the ping pong table.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh. And if there's an outdoor barbecue. Yeah. Playing Gossens party. Yeah. But I think you guys do bring, and it's good that you're breaking into the corporate space because there is a lot of structure there, and it does deserve some room to be humble. Do you know what I mean? Mm. Like there's, yeah, you can still bring that vibe that you've sort of learned and lived, and then you're just leveling up to the corporate client space.
Yeah, and I guess that's where I'm finding value at the moment, sort of playing in this new sphere and dealing with larger corporations and that kind of thing, as well as like didn't realize we were doing it. I don't know if we're doing it consciously or not, but we've hired lots of people that aren't necessarily industry people, as in not the stereotypical role. So we're kind of finding misfits and putting them together.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, and that wasn't a conscious effort. I've just sort of realized that's what's been happening. So I think that makes the culture really cool and really good. There's none of this part of the Perth industry bubble thing going on.
Plugs from UWA.
Yeah, that kind of stuff. So I don't know if that was a subconscious thing or not. But yeah, I'm finding lots of value in that stuff and developing more of the serious business side of things. But I don't know if that answered your question or not.
No, it does. Well, can you expand a bit more on like what your passion is? Because you obviously have an affinity. That's the word I was looking for before. Affinity.
Beginning with A?
Yeah. I was like adept, but when you have an affinity for something, you're good at naturally good at it. So you have an affinity for dealing with people, which is interesting with an engineering background. You have an affinity for the process side of things, which is, you know, you can kind of see how you've developed that in your structuring businesses. And you've got an affinity for management and pulling together a team. So like, what is your passion? What's in it for you every day?
What I do well, I've realized in my last 2 iterations of business, so Social Media and Perth is okay, so I'm a director of both of those, is finding someone who is way better at all the things that I'm shit at. And I think as a creative in the traditional sense of the term, which I do have issues with anyway, but as in a creative, I'm not that way inclined. It's not systematic enough for me. But then I've managed to find business partners in both businesses that are fanatics, freaks of creativity, if you want to use that term, which they all hate as well. But they're really good at that shit. So I provide the other stuff, the sort of businessy, driving business, client management stuff. And I think that's probably why both businesses are working. And most people will say that doing business with friends is a bad idea, but it's all I've ever done. So
I mean, what are we doing? I'm going to fall out with you.
let's not monetize it.
Yeah. So I think the advice is if you're going to do business with anyone, make sure that there's complementing skill sets.
Yeah.
Yep. So that as a whole, you're good. And my current structure is like we never have agreements or disagreements or arguments. Like everyone knows what they're good at. Mm-hmm. So when they pull rank on something creative or what it should be or the services or that kind of producty side of things, if you want to distill it down to that, they manage product control and I manage the other stuff and it all works pretty good.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm passionate about, driving these businesses.
Oh, that's cool. That was a nice little summary. Yeah. I like that. And I really like the idea that you've managed to tie the systematic side with the creative side, not by like upskilling yourself and pushing yourself to a limit that you possibly can't reach. by like actual partnerships.
Well, yeah, you have to figure out eventually. Like, you can't be good at absolutely everything. If there's any advice to anyone starting business, there's some bits you need to have. And if you can't do your bookkeeping or if you can't look at the numbers, you shouldn't be in business. Even if you're not necessarily in control of that part of the business. As a director, and let's say someone else is doing looking after that stuff, you need to be able to understand those things and what tax is and what a BAS is and what bookkeeping means. And
these are all trigger words.
Yeah, because if you don't, if you don't know that shit, like, you can really ruin your bloody life. So make sure you've got that bit down at the very least, and then just sort of pick bits. It's like, if you like the marketing side, delve into that bit. If you like the HR side, delve into that bit. If you like the networky, salesy, businessy side, delve into it. Like, it's okay. You can be pretty good at everything, but you don't need to be the best at everything. So, yeah, I think there's definitely some skills that you should have, and that general business bit you need to have because you're liable for it. Get that bit down.
Yeah.
I feel like spoken like a true director, not a salesperson. There's quite a lot. Yeah, there's a lot of crossover with business owners who are naturally sales oriented, and you can hear like Gary V sort of in the way they say things, like, oh, you just got to do this, and you're like, easy for you to say. Can't just do that.
But we were like that early days. It was like, let's just fucking do everything. It was because we can. It's like, oh, we could do that. And it's like, yeah, you could literally do anything, but it doesn't mean that you need to or you should. And like, it's very easy to see businesses that are kind of getting distracted by what they could do and not they should do. Like, the key is do fucking throw shit at the wall until it sticks. But then when something sticks, like, laser focus into that and just do that on repeat and turn that into a fine art, rather than trying to do 10 things poorly.
Yeah.
Do one thing really, really well. And the more you do it, the better you'll be at it, and the better you'll package it, and you'll understand what your clients do and don't want, and test case it and proof it and keep banging at it until it's perfect, rather than try and do a million and one things.
Yes.
That's my opinion on it.
Yeah.
And then it's replicable.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm curious, working in, like, digital media, are you able to, like, forecast, like, you know, what you're going to do next year, or is it like kind of subject to what's happening right now because of how fast things like need to change and adapt? Or do you have like, I guess, like procedures in place to be able to adapt it to a, like a current situation?
So there's always a model, right? And I used to think that that was bullshit. But it turns out there is always a model. You just need to figure out what model is working for your business and whether it's seasonal or what have you. But so for digital media, Perth is okay. We have year-on-year data to look on, but we're kind of like doubling revenue, and that's not supposed to be a big blow-up, but the market out there is really good, so numbers are going up. But then you can use that number versus year-on-year versus previous month. If you get good at looking at the numbers, you can start doing different scenarios, and as long as you always play it somewhat conservative or based on your risk portfolio, you can start forecasting pretty well. And it's kind of like chicken and egg. Like, you forecast what the bottom is and you make sure you hit that, and if you need more salespeople or more resources or whatever it is, once the numbers get big enough, they start playing by the rules, which is kind of weird. Maybe you'll get some statistician on here one day that will talk about all those bell curves
trends. Yeah, I was just picturing a graph, like, trend line,
which weird though, like, they just starts happening, and it's like year on year, and obviously people want to spend more money around Christmas
because
they want to sell more shit, right? So cool, Christmas, that's a good one. But then I guess the key with most businesses, and it's been the challenge with Perth is okay, is figuring out how to flatten that revenue curve to take some of the stress away. And when it's two of you freelancing, it's not that scary. But when you have five or six staff and office overheads and all that kind of jazz, you kind of need to start making sure that you're covering the bases. And that's when you start looking at annual deals, or rather than looking at case by case, you try and convince your clients that it's better for them to look at a longer view. And then you incentivize them to do that by value or whatever. Or you find other revenue streams that aren't necessarily based on that kind of model. So yeah, every business should be able to figure out a way of making it less project-based. And I've come from project-based, so the events thing
Is
big outlay to make lots of money or potentially lose lots of money. And if that's your business, you need to have the bankroll to be able to sustain multiple losses. So that the, let's say the model is 1 in 4 wins, which could be the case with large-scale festivals. So unless you have the money to sort of sustain those losses, so that knowing that the fourth one comes in, then it's going to be a tough slog.
Yeah, okay.
And I'm assuming lots of like engineering, those big project firms would operate in a similar thing, which means you have to have a transient workforce and blah, 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 blah.
No, I get
business
that.
Jargon.
What's been the biggest challenge for you? Because it sounds like we're obviously talking more about the business structure and developing that sort of thing. What's been the biggest challenge for you as a business owner entering that space? Or it could be a challenge that you sort of foresee or are dealing with at the moment?
At the moment, it's business is good, and anyone in business in WA should be having a very positive outlook at the moment, given all the factors and the economy out there. I see the talent pool and hiring really difficult for everyone right now, regardless of industry. So from hospitality venues trying to find bartenders and chefs, to digital marketers trying to find anyone, to engineering, to downward pressure on the labour force by the mining industry hiring everyone. So that's going to be a big issue next year, just because, positive growth in all industries minus no one coming in equals like it's going to be a real shortfall.
Yeah.
So what happens there will be interesting. And it's like if people start paying 20-30% more for staff and then those people get used to that wage and then that goes away, what happens then? Are you kind of stuck in a position where you think you're worth something, or maybe you've committed to a lifestyle that you might not be able to uphold if things go back to normal?
Yeah.
So that's what I'm thinking about at the moment, just because we're hiring and stuff. And we've done lots of hiring lately.
Yeah.
But challenges, I think if there's a tip, it's finding scalable operational expenses. What I mean by that, don't start your business and then go hire an accountant or a full-time bookkeeper because that's expensive.
Yeah.
So if you can find a solution whereby you're paying for a sliver of a bookkeeper.
Yeah.
And I use that as a great case in point. So it's like you can get subscriptions now for a month and they'll do X amount of annotating and blah, 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 blah for you for a fraction of the price for like a couple $100 a month kind of thing. That's a really good way to tick the bookkeeping box, second check that thing, or we're still in WeWork, which has been really good to us.
So we moved
in there like 18 months ago, 2 years ago. And we've gone from a 3-person office to a 6 to a 10 to a 15 to a 20.
Yeah.
So that's a really good scalable operational expense.
Yeah, because if you were to go down, you could still maintain like your location and the integrity of your being close to the businesses you work with.
Yeah.
But up and downsize, and can confirm the view is great from.
Yes, the view is good up in the Rio Tinto building. But even now, it's like we're probably spending as much as you'd want to spend in a shared workspace. Mm. But then the convenience for me, not having to deal with keep the lights on and the floors cleaned, is really helpful.
Yeah, great.
And previously, I've always had offices that they're either too big or too small, and then you're locked into 3-year leases and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
So don't do that. And I guess the whole shared workspace thing probably wasn't as prevalent when we kind of started.
No, it wasn't,
11 years ago. So that's a big one. And if you're going to take that mantra to like literally everything possible, I think your business will be able to grow and you won't get the pressures of having fixed stuff.
Yeah, that's interesting. It's funny when you were talking about the accounting, I was like, Hannah's probably getting triggered over there.
My mum's an accountant.
Yeah.
Yes and no. The only reason I'll say no is because I've seen small businesses start without any, like you said, like some people are just like not good.
I'll definitely have an accountant. Just hire one full time.
Oh, yeah, no.
Don't hire anyone full time.
No,
if possible.
No. Not like personalized. No, I would never support that.
So definitely 100% have an accountant.
Yeah.
But
don't try and do that yourself. Yeah,
no. I see lots of people hire admin and hire bookkeepers and hire PAs and like hire. It's like
No, I get you. You need like
get an accountant. Yeah. And get a lawyer and do all those things. Just don't get fixed cost stuff.
Yeah. No, I do agree with that. Yeah.
Yeah. Phew. That was a test. No, I think that's good advice because I don't know if I would think that until I was in it, I guess. Because you think, like, I've seen in the businesses that I've managed to work for, they do, like, I've had a boss who hired her mate as an accountant and, like, didn't go so well. And then, like, someone else has, yeah, full-time, like, the PA, the accounting, and you're like, wow, well, they must really be making bank. But then you hear, you know, you go out and drinks one night and the accountant's like, oh, yeah, better not put it on your card. You got nothing in there. And everyone's like, oh, because you're paying all this, like, admin hub in your business.
Yeah.
And then you've got barely enough people to do the output. And, you know, it's a whole thing. So it's interesting that you said that because I wouldn't probably have thought of that initially, so it's good to know.
And it's really easy to hire. It's a lot harder to fire people. So.
Yeah. Yeah, so if you've got them on the short. Yeah. Yeah.
But
yeah.
Also, like, things like setting up your website, nearly anyone can do that on their own now.
Mm-hmm.
With,
yeah,
like, a, yeah, Foursquare or Weeks Squarespace or kind of thing, yeah, or, yeah, whatever. Or you can use Upwork for all kinds of stuff. And,
oh,
yes,
Upwork's great.
Yeah,
I like
it's
Upwork.
So good.
Yeah,
and,
love,
like,
it.
Is it as good as someone you'd hire locally? No, it's not. But is it enough to get you started? Yes.
Yeah.
Like the Perth's OK logo, we got our friend Jeff to do, and I would hate to think what we paid for it. It would be nothing. And we've gotten some good years out of that.
Aww.
Yeah. So, yeah, you don't need to overdo that. And I should do myself out a job here as a social media marketing agent. But, yeah, there's levels for each kind of customer, client, whatever. And, like, if you've got every year, you should do your marketing budget as percentage of your expected turnover. And
yeah,
just spend that much. And then eventually that will get bigger and bigger.
Yeah.
Don't go drop 20 grand on your first logo suite to realize you have no customers.
Yeah.
Draw one.
Yeah. So, like, the road is long. So
that's so funny, yeah. I think we actually started, like, I was looking, we did a little logo, or someone else who I used to do the podcast with did the logo initially, and then we got some feedback on some people were like, oh, I can't quite read it. The colors are a little bit conflicting because it was, like, light yellow on, like, a light purpley blue, which is what we currently have. Or it was more blue, I think. And then I spoke to a friend who did design because, like, unbeknownst to, if I'm not a designer, I'm going to ask the experts. If I'm not in HR, I'm going to ask, you know. So I reached out and I was like, how would you go about creating a logo? And she was like, yeah, it's super, you know, there's really clear steps. This is what I do. And I was like, oh, do you want to do it with us? Like, maybe we can partner. You'll do an interview on the podcast, all that. And it just was really expensive. And obviously a podcast, you're not making any money. And as much as I wanted to support her, I was like, okay, I obviously can't do it at this stage. So I went away and kind of did my best on Canva. And that's what we're sitting with at the moment. I know that, like, obviously with what I have, it's not that important for the logo to be schmick, professional and expensive at this stage.
No.
But who knows, in like a couple of years, it might be something really important. That's, yeah. But depending on the stage that you're at, I think it's, yeah, the non-fixed term things and the non-massive commitments are really, really nice little springboards to get you to the next level where people are like, oh, sick logo. And now that I hear that, I'm like, oh, it's readable. Yeah. Did a good job. Nice. Love it. It's
minimal viable shit. Product. Yeah. Yeah. Just got to get it going.
How do you find that your journey has been impacted by the audiences that you've engaged with? So by that, I mean, for example, for the podcast, we're very much based on what the audience feeds to us. So if someone says to me, We hear from a lot of small business owners in this space, or I get a lot of digital marketers reaching out to us as well, and that's great. We have a lot of similar things to talk about. But if someone says, oh, I haven't heard from a creative, like, what? I wonder what a designer did to start her business, I'd then reach out to a designer and interview her. So how much do you rely on your audience engagement to sort of carve your path, not just with Perth is Okay, because I feel like you'd get, like, the best, I mean, you get a lot of feedback online for that, right? You just need
some to might say too much.
yeah. Some people might need to hold back on that.
Yeah,
thank you for your opinions.
Yeah, thanks for that. Save that for the Christmas party.
Yeah. But I guess in all walks of your life, in any business you've done, like, if someone went to your event and they were like, shit event, would you be like, okay, we need to change the structure of the event? Like, how has it worked for you in the past?
I think it's, so one thing that stuck with me, and I've listened to all the Tim Ferriss podcasts in the world and all those kind of things, and I've kind of gone off them now because, one, they're kind of samey, and two, that hustle culture is kind of tiring and maybe toxic if you boil it down.
Hashtag boss lady.
Yeah. Like, yeah, I get it.
Yeah.
Go out there and do your thing, but I think some people are spending more time talking about it than doing it, which we can talk about later.
Yeah.
But we first started out, and the Tim Ferriss comment is, he's got a thing where it's like, if you have 1,000 real customers, your business will work. And
simple. I like it.
Really simple, yeah. Right? If you can keep 1,000 people happy and you can probably, between your circles, go find 1,000 people, you'll see if it's going to work pretty quickly. And I guess that's what our events business started off with, was bringing our friends.
Mm-hmm.
And we created a product for our friends, and there was a constant feedback loop on if they liked it and were they having fun. And you didn't need marketing because they would just all come, right?
Did you count on them to be honest to you?
Well, yeah. The problem is that most people, when things are bad, they're more likely to tell you that it's okay and you're doing good.
Oh,
yeah.
Because if it's a shit event or whatever, if it's
they want to support you.
They want to support you. But, oh, no, it's pretty good. But it's like, well, no, that's not what I need right now. Yeah. I need constructive criticism.
Yeah, and you have to build a thick skin to take that as well, right?
Yeah, and that might be the hardest thing. But then we used to, like, sometimes we'd go to events and we'd just sit out the front and just talk to randoms and be like, oh, fuck, what's this thing? What's this about? And just sort of try and get some feedback.
Yeah.
Whereas when things are going really well, probably people are probably a bit more constructive
because
they think you're killing it.
Yeah.
Which is the converse.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Maybe that's a Perth thing.
Yeah.
Then I guess sort of when we did the events thing, it was really attached to us personally. And then we wanted to do Perth is Okay. And we didn't tell anyone that we were behind it, me and Blake, for years, because we didn't want it to be tainted by other businesses that we'd run or a different audience.
Right.
We really wanted to see, let it become its own thing. And if we'd sat there and been like, all right, cool, who's our target audience? Should we target 25 to 35-year-old females in Perth, WA? That's wouldn't have worked, I don't think. We literally just did the thing, and that is our target audience. Mm-hmm. So primary audience is 25 to 35 females, then 35 to 45 females, and then 25 to 35 males, 86% based in WA.
And just quick stats off the top of your head.
Quick stats. Good plug.
Yeah.
but yes, we didn't set out to do that, and now we do take feedback and criticism and listen to people's complaints, but the internet and social media is a dark, dark place, so you can't take too much of that shit in, because it's just a bit of a cesspool. So I think maybe having a panel of people that you trust to give you good advice.
No keyboard warriors.
The general public, like, have people on your team that are a good litmus. So Ida de Troy he's great. He's the perfect moral compass and knows where to sit on a lot of things. But general public feedback, no. Trusted group of friends, maybe yes. Your mum, probably no.
Yeah, no personal stakeholder.
No, you kind of want anonymous, like, constructive feedback and certain things. So maybe, your realist person that will tell you how it is. And at the end of the day, you can take as much feedback in as possible, and that's a good thing to do. But you have to do what your gut tells you or what you think is the right way, or you're the one that has to live by it. So sometimes there's too much feedback.
Yeah. I had a question as well on the putting your face on things. So I guess everything that you've spoke about, when I heard of Perth is Okay first, obviously I've attended certain things, had no idea you guys were, like, behind it. And then to find that out, I was like, what the hell? Like, you... Are you a personality? Dare I grace your presence?
Oh, God.
And then you realize you're just a human being, right? And that's why you've kept it, like...
Apparently,
I probably,
so.
Yeah, why? You're just a humble... You're just one of us.
Boring.
Welcome to the real world. So I guess I didn't pose a question, but, like, it's interesting to me that you haven't put a face on...
Are you just asking if I'm a personality? Is that the question?
We'll take constructive anonymous feedback on that one.
the decision to put your face on things, is that kind of the...
Yeah.
It works for some people, right? Like, do you want to be Gary Vee? Do you want to be the evangelical person? Like, maybe some people pull it off. But... Do you want to be recognised when you walk down the street? I could think of absolutely nothing worse. Maybe there are certain times when it's constructive and suitable to your career.
Mm-hmm.
But for us and me and everything that we've done, we've tried to let the work speak.
Yeah.
This is the first podcast I've ever done.
Yeah,
so
we're humble.
And it's just kind of like I'd never really thought that any of it was that noteworthy or important. Perhaps you guys do, so that's why we're doing it.
Yeah,
I'm not sure.
I like that you've said the work speaks for itself, because in certain circumstances, I think that's definitely the case. And some people do rely on, I guess, in some industries, so where you've got coaches and things like that. And that, I think that's a huge thing that's happening at the moment, is your online coaches and, you know, people who are going to help you get on that live stream or whatever it is. And I tried it out myself a little bit as well. I like to be faceless, and I do my network of, like, my ability to network with people is comes from, like, a grounded sort of place, I believe, anyway. People are probably like, this girl. but, like, I think I tried to do, like, a few videos of myself purely for the podcast, because a lot of people said it. They were like, it's weird, because when we see, like, your podcast channels, we can't see that it's you, and we can't actually see the voice and who it is. So I did a couple of videos and got a really great feedback on it. And then when Hannah, like, joined me, people were like, who's Hannah? Is she a full-time co-host? Like, what is her background? What does she do? And then I realized, oh, we actually, for the sake of, like, this specific podcast, you do need a face on it. And if you're a business coach, you do need your face on it, because how are people going to trust you? Mm. But I suppose in the case of your business, it's literally for the community, almost by the community as well, like, completely. So that's probably where you wouldn't need the face. But do you have any plans in the future to kind of, I don't know, validate yourself a bit more in the public, sort of, now that you're experienced and you've got a bit of, like, a solid network in Perth now, and you might potentially expand over east for certain things, which we can talk about in a second. But how, yeah, do you see the importance of your notability as a human being, as, you know, Luke Whelan yourself, becoming more important?
Yes, I think it's probably LinkedIn driven for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I think LinkedIn is probably one of the most exciting social media platforms
You're
at the moment.
You're
very active. I am very active. And I guess that's kind of leading the willingness and openness to do things like this. Mm-hmm. And I think there's still lots of chest beating and bullshit on LinkedIn, which hopefully chills out as more people come onto the platform.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, there's definitely importance. For me, it's been about doing something that I think is noteworthy enough to then be able to speak to people about it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's more about that validation internally before I don't want to give people bad advice or be like big up something. So maybe it's a internal thing rather than an external thing.
Yep.
I fucking hate the sound of my voice, so that's probably another thing.
We're going to completely change it, by the way. It's just going to be completely
modulated.
Different. Yeah.
That'd be good.
He actually
really
sounds
high,
like,
pitched.
Yeah.
Maybe auto-tune? Yeah. Can we put that in?
Yeah. Yeah, I like it.
No. Not going to do it. Not going to
do natural.
It.
Or natural. Sound like Schmeagel.
Yeah.
Were you just going to imitate auto-tune for us? Oh, come on.
No way.
We'll cut it out.
Yeah, no way. but yeah, so I guess it is important to do. I think there is I like be humble, and I guess speaking to things that you haven't yet experienced or achieved might be seen as speaking out of turn.
Mm-hmm.
So I like to hear from people who've done something, and I'm like, cool, now I can validate your opinion. And as we were discussing earlier, there's plenty of opinions out there. Some might say too many, and in this digital age, everyone feels like they're the next guru.
Yeah.
So maybe it's kind of spoilt that for me somewhat.
Right.
But then hearing about true stories and people that have done shit, and I think there should be more stories about people that have completely fucked it up. I think that's probably more beneficial.
Low-key what we're trying to do here. I feel like people really like to hear the challenges and how you overcame them.
Mm.
And I think, like, obviously we're going to scratch out that question about what's it like to be Prime Minister, because you're not there yet. But speaking to you about what you have done, like, you've acknowledged, like, that five-year, like, stint was really great learning experience. You really delved into, like, your roots as a person and your connections with the artist or the music industry. But there wasn't like an expectation or a limit that you set for it, and you didn't set limits based on what you achieved. And then you recognized that the instability of, or the possibility of burnout, was very real for the event space. And that's kind of how you are, sort of where you are now, which is really cool.
Yes, the possibility of burnout is still always there. But yeah, I guess it's managing your time and your expectations and where you want to be. I'm not sure if I've got more to say on that.
Yeah, no, that's fine. That's all good. I guess another route that we can take with this one is sort of in the future, where do you see you going? Because I feel like you've done quite a lot in the space of time. Like, you're only 50, right?
Yeah, I know, right? You can tell by the bag.
$50 a day over 60. Yeah, I know, right?
More, please. Just the grey hairs that give away and the long grey beard.
Hey, at least you still got hair. That's a win.
Yeah, take that. Lucky in that sense.
Where do you see it going?
Where does it end up? We had a conversation with one of the dudes from Pedestrian recently, mm-hmm. and it was about this and what we do with Perth is Okay and this platform. Mm-hmm. And the audience is to a size now where we're notable in WA. So with a lot of businesses, it comes the, do you jump the Nullarbor? Do you go international? What is the expansion path? And I truly believe that WA is unique as a city or a state in Australia. That sort of stands alone, and there's plenty of businesses that completely fuck themselves by trying to go national, and I've tried to do the national events thing and it was difficult. Mm-hmm. Just the nuances and being a Perthian is a true
personality.
You're really unique in Australia, I think. The nuances and the whole Perth is Okay mantra, that self-deprecating while being fucking awesome, I think it's a truly West Aussie thing.
Yeah.
So we're talking to Chris from Pedestrian, and we're like, do we do Adelaide is Okay and Tasmania is Okay, and we've got all the different is Okays.
Mm.
And basically it boiled down to, why do that if you could just be the biggest in Western Australia?
Mm.
Starting again in these different states and doing satellite offices. And we were forced anyway by COVID to not explore it further. But we still have a lot of things we want to do here in the digital media space. Mm. And I think there's not enough competition in the digital media space in Western Australia. So there's more opportunity to expand and sort of grow with our audience and drop in new content pillars. And maybe it's not always written. Maybe in the future it's more video or it's more podcasts. I just think there will always be a need and an appetite for independent media.
Mm-hmm.
I think digital media is closer to what the future looks like than traditional media.
Yeah.
And that's no sledge on traditional media, but if you can't track it, then you can't spend money on it. And I've done my own billboards and radio ads, and I've done everything in that kind of space. A0s, flyer people, like, you name it, I've done it from a marketing perspective.
Yeah.
And if you can't track it and attribute it, then there's a future where no one will do it.
Yeah.
So what will happen is those platforms will start looking closer to the platforms that we know and use.
Yeah.
And like sort of self-serving ads on digital display or digital on-demand TV, I think will be a lot closer to what the back end of Facebook looks like than what they're currently doing.
Yeah.
So that's the future here. Short term, just bigger in WA. So next year will be a big year. More writers, more content producers, more long-form video. And just always trying to be deeper and more meaningful because we need it, I think. Mm. Like, 7 West own 86% of the news in WA. Which is huge by them, like a tremendous result.
Yeah.
But is that enough competition in the local landscape? Yeah. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But and then if the national makes sense at some point, I'd have to move there, or Blake would have to move there.
Yeah.
To do it properly. Our whole thing is the ultimate local's guide to wherever, right?
So yeah, so you can't not be local.
You can't be not local. So we
gotta know the scene.
Yeah. So we've sort of built this bed of nails for ourselves now. So we're actually going to go do it properly.
Yeah.
that's kind of cool. That might make sense at some point to go somewhere else.
Yeah.
And then agency land-wise, we're positioning ourselves as WA's premier social media marketing agency.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that's kind of true based on no one else really positioning themselves that way.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. We feel like social media is normally 10 on a list of things that digital agencies do.
Yep.
And for us, we think that it should be number one. And yes, it'll involve bits and facets of all the other digital media craft, but we think this is, again, where advertising and media is going.
Yeah.
So watch this space.
Yeah.
We'll see if that actually plays out. Otherwise, I'll be broke again. we'll see. But I think that's kind of the space I'm in right now, and keep finding good people and developing this team. I don't necessarily need to have huge teams, I think, anymore. I think having smaller boutique teams is probably better.
Yeah, quality.
Yeah, know people, and yeah, the thought of having hundreds and hundreds of staff scares the shit out of me. But maybe in 10 years' time, that's different.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the short-term outlook.
Cool.
What about you guys? What's happening next year? Plug away.
Plug away. Oh. Well, we actually want to do like a southwest road trip.
Sell it to us. Yeah. So
she can't speak. She runs the podcast. I think the big goal for us next year and early next year is to do a big southwest road trip to give a voice to all the the essence of WA that doesn't currently have a voice on audio particularly, and potentially video. So I'm talking like wineries, distilleries, so the vineyard owners.
Any excuse to drink.
And Hannah's going to be there. She's going to be a moral support.
I'm the tester.
So, that's the goal for us, because I think with the partnership between Hannah and I, it's really strengthening. We are seeing each other's strengths. Like, obviously, your business knowledge comes in for particular guests in particular moments in the podcast. And then it's hard to talk about your own strengths. But, like, I really like, talking to people. And I love, like, I can see a future for doing what I really enjoy, because I really enjoy this. And I mentioned before, things like technology scare me with this because I don't want to fuck it up. But I feel like the perfectionist in me has kind of, you've got to push the boundaries on that a bit. But essentially the main goal, that expanding down, like, staying WA, obviously, because we're the Perth Business Podcast. But having that southwest sort of reach, I guess, and the connections, building networks there, I think, to bring Perth out of its little bubble and to pull the wider region into like what we actually do and what we talk about and who we talk to. If only there was like a publication that kind of, I don't know, knew heaps of different best places in Perth to
I'm sure we could find that.
Southwest region.
Hannah and Bess do the Southwest.
Hey? Anyone looking for it? All right. We have the car, it's got four seats. Hannah, let's go.
But I think repetition is key. Like, you'll get so good at this after a while that you'll be able to spit them out, I reckon. You're going to fuck it up at some point.
For sure, yeah.
So plan
for
it.
I'm going to drag as many people down.
Thank God for a full-time job.
I always plan for the absolute worst case in my mind and become really comfortable with that. If you're comfortable with the absolute worst case scenario.
We've all got lists.
If you're comfortable with the worst case scenario, then you can sort of get on with it because you've planned for it.
Yeah.
And the worst thing is you're going to lose money.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't. You're not going to get sick or ruin your health by ruining one of these podcasts or a business or whatever. So it's like, all right, cool. If I lose all my money and whatever, then even if you lost your house, is it the worst? Is it the end of the world? Like, in the literal sense of it? No. So you can always rebuild. And thankfully, we live in a time when it's a lot easier to rebuild than potentially in the past, right?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and I think how we're going to trial that, like, sort of expansion to enable us to do what we want to do in WA is, like, short-term sponsorships and things like that. That's really something that we want to start doing, because I think if it's short-term, there's basically no risk to either party. You can yay or nay it whenever, you know, that, say it's, like, 6 weeks or a couple of months. It'd be great to have, like, a flagship sponsor, and then for, depending on what we want to do, individual independent ones for those short-term say, you know, the Southwest road trip, a car sponsored to drive us down there, someone to help us out with accommodation, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Drink sponsors for the ones that we hold in Perth so that we can give a voice to, like, for example, when we interviewed Whippersnapper or Funk Cider, having them sort of present because they were really special to us. They were our first, you know, interviews, and they were really humble about it and great about it and super easy to work with. It'd be nice to be able to look back at, like, the 100th episode and be like, they're still with us, like, in, like, we're sipping on them right now. So, creepy, but yeah. Not literally.
What we do in our own time is that.
My advice on that is, I once had a media platform that made no money, and trying to figure out how to turn that into a financial thing is never do anything for free.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you get one can of beer, that is a professional relationship with another company in the form of contra. And if you can
make that as official seeming, whether it's an email, a contract, or a proposal, or mm-hmm. whatever, that sets a relationship up to be a professional relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas just being easy breezy about it means it's not setting up the tone for future stuff.
Yeah.
And you can switch the tone between professional and non-professional. But yeah, even if it is a car for an hour, if you treat it like it's a multi-million dollar deal in the way you professionally approach that, I think that gives them a level of professionalism back as well.
Yeah.
And sets up a relationship that can be expanded on. And if you can get 1 cent, that's an awesome win.
Yeah.
And figuring out what the value is and delivering a report based on metrics and all those kind of things, that part of the business, that's what I've learnt how to do. And I think you're in the right space to do that.
I think the biggest challenge for us is that I don't have, well, a little bit of a sales background, but I'm not a salesy person, so it's really hard to approach that, and it's going to be a learning
curve.
They're
the best salespeople, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, because you come from, like, I know what I want and what I can offer, and I'm not trying to stab anyone in a, you know, I don't want to take advantage of anyone.
Not
like,
car salesman.
Get this lemon in your driveway.
Sell me this pen.
Oh, Jesus. First day of marketing school. For engineering, it was like, build a bridge out of these paddle pop sticks. They still do that today. Yeah, like, they do,
Spaghetti?
Yeah.
How good.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think the sales thing, I've had to learn it from scratch.
Mm.
And I looked at all the stuff and just go in and be genuine and tell them a story has always worked well for me. And yeah, if you have an audience, you have value. And whether you're sending an invoice for 10 cents or 10 grand, like, getting that process down as soon as possible means that you can sort of expand on it, and then you're setting up a pricing structure that as your audience expands and your footprint expands, so does the price.
Yeah.
And you can back those numbers up and be like, hey, here's the report, here's how many people saw it, yada, yada, yada. If you want to track it, put in a discount code for fucking Bob's windscreens in Margaret River. That kind of thing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm excited for your journey ahead.
Thank you. Yeah. Because I know that you guys sponsor Lifeline, right?
We do.
Yeah. Tell us how that came about.
That came through our account manager, Casey, had a relationship with one of the girls there. And we came on just as a digital sponsor for their latest season, I guess. So they turned the lights on at Optus Stadium a couple of weeks ago. And I guess for us, we're trying to figure out where we fit in that kind of charity space. And there's so many great charities out there.
Yeah.
So we're like, which ones do we want to get involved in? Which ones do we not get involved in? Yeah, it's kind of new world for us, that kind of corporate-y sponsorship kind of thing. So we're still figuring it out, I guess. But obviously that charity made sense for us.
Yeah.
So we wanted to get behind it, and hopefully there's more. But I think what we'll do maybe next year, or when we get the time, we'll be have like a couple per year that we really back and then sort of cycle through that.
Yeah.
So that we can sort of support different people. And
yeah, and keep learning the different nuances of, sponsorship and that.
Yeah, that kind of world of things.
Yeah.
Which is cool.
Awesome. Oh, cool. No, that was really good. I really enjoyed that conversation, the breakdown of how it kind of, went from like, you're an actual human being with real, like I don't know, feelings and stuff. And it's cool to like watch it evolve as it did on that, you know. It's not a smooth, okay, I'm going to start a business, I'm going to start here, and it's just going to be an ever slowly, you know, incrementally increasing trajectory.
It's a sine wave.
Times 1 million.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a lot.
Everyone's overboard.
Yeah. Did you have any last questions or?
No.
Yeah, cool. No. Let's wrap it up. Yeah. I love
it.
Thanks for listening to that episode of the Perth Business Podcast with Luke Whelan. Make sure you jump into the comments on our Instagram, Facebook, or LinkedIn and give us your 2 cents once you've had a listen. Also, don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe on your podcast listening app. It really helps us spread the word of so many important and incredible business owners in Perth. Thanks, guys. See you here next time.